May I use this opportunity to welcome the competition authorities, competition commission, and competition tribunal. We're going to be starting with the competition commission with the 2013 stretch plan. I just want to be sure that we have relevant documents. We're supposed to be having the actual strategic plan, the reviewed stretch plan for 2013. Every year it gets reviewed, because we work on a 5-year term strategic plan, and it gets reviewed every year. That's the 5 years from 2009 to 2014. I think this is the last but one annual reviewer. If you do have that, it's fine, but then you also have, I guess, the presentation, which is a short summary of the actual document, stress plan document. You should also in your documents be having the APP, the annual performance plan, and you should also be having attached to all the documents should be the corporate plan that is that is the human resource, what do you call it? The reviewed organogram. If you have attached it, Mr. Ramboro? When you review a stretch plan, you review also your organogram. You review your APP. Those are the documents that we'd love to have. We're also working on the medium term expenditure framework of the entity, which is supposed to tell us about your finances, that's your budget projections. Okay. Can we be clarified as to which documents are not, we do not have, I'm sorry, I have comfortability of my foot. Okay. May I request the competition commission, Mr. Ramboro, which documents we don't have here with us, so that we record that?
It seems that you don't have the structure document, Chair.
That's okay, all right. Can
we'll
be provided
yeah.
with that at a later stage, thank you. So, yes, that is in connection with the work of the Competition Commission. We afterwards going to be getting also a presentation from the Competition Tribunal, which I take it that you also have the documents that I have alluded to.
Yes, Ms. Karin. We have submitted our annual performance plan, and you have been given the strategic plan in the past. So what we've done is brought you a very brief presentation to take you through key issues. And then we've also given you a copy of the latest Tribunal Tribune, which shows as an example of the kind of media that we are talking about.
We have gone through that, but I wouldn't say
what should I call you? It's Karim.
You can call me Yasmin. I'm happy with
okay.
that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Because we are in an official meeting, let me call you Ms. Karim.
Yes.
The document for the purposes of for the sake of uniformity, would want to have those documents, because as we write our reports, we want to write our reports in relation to the said documents, because we are required to report on that.
We will send you all the documents that you require. Yeah?
Okay. Let's engage with you when we come to your
yes.
your time. Thank you very much. May we then, without a waste of time, I think we've been interacting with the competition authorities now for this is the fourth year, and I think we have gained some insight into the work of the competition authorities, and I think now we can engage intelligently with you as compared to previous. We are sort of more informed and more knowledgeable as far as the work of the competition authorities are concerned, and also in relation to the book that governs your work, that gives you a mandate, that is the Competition Act. We are aware that there were some amendments effected to your act in 2009, actually assented to in 2009, but it's not all the, I'm told, it's not all the amendments that were effected, just one or two of them, and the rest will be sent back to us for to be amended, I guess, before the end of this term. So we'll be happy to engage with that too. But as of now, we're looking at the mandate, which is still the same. It hasn't changed. So we will be engaging on your mandate vis-a-vis the expectations or what the country is looking upon you to really do, especially in the midst of the three major challenges that are facing us as a country, that of poverty, inequality, and unemployment. So, Mr. Ramburu, can I then, immediately after we dealt with apologies, give you the platform to address us? Tando, can you give us the apologies?
Good afternoon, honorable members. From the committee's side, I've got two apologies. Actually, three. The first apology is from Honorable Babaza. He apologized that he would be arriving a bit late. He is still on his way to the meeting. The second apology is from Honorable Sengwa. He apologized that he won't be able to attend due to party commitments. And the third one is from Honorable Hussein. He also apologized that he won't be able to attend due to party responsibilities. I've also got an apology from the DG of the department. She apologized that she is not in a position to attend the meeting today and the meetings today and tomorrow due to the BRICS summit. However, the department is represented by Mr. Mohamed Vauda, the acting DDG, Economic Planning. The last apology I have is from Mr. Norman Manoim, the chairperson of the Competition Tribunal. He apologized that he won't be able to attend the meeting due to the fact that today is his religious day and he's unable to attend personally. However, the tribunal is represented by Ms. Yasmin Karim, the full-time tribunal member of the executive committee, Ms. Yanin de Klerk, the head of corporate services, and Ms. Mondo Mazwai, one of the tribunal's part-time tribunal members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tando. May we then hand over to Mr. Ramroth.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, honourable members, for this opportunity. It's always a very challenging experience for us to be engaging with this committee. I should start off by perhaps introducing my team. On my right-hand side is Trudy Makaya, and she is currently a manager of our advocacy and stakeholder relations, and on my left-hand side is Oliver Josie, who manages the cartels division, but of course that's not the full story. Hot off the press is that both Oliver and Trudy have been appointed as deputy commissioners at the Competition Commission. And I think I can speak for everybody in the organization and perhaps for people in the broader private sector competition community by saying that this is a very welcomed appointment. We're very pleased to have both Trudy and Oliver as deputy commissioners. They're very competent people, as their work has already proved in this field of competition. But I think most importantly, it kind of gives a major boost for perhaps the two most significant pieces of work that the competition authorities are doing. Oliver, who is an attorney by training, as part of managing the cartels division, is also responsible for managing our fast-track construction settlement, which is a big major project of ours and which is actually at the tail end. This is a project we will complete at the beginning of the next financial year. We've kind of reported on this as it went along regularly, so he's responsible for that, which is a big major project. And Trudy is who's an economist by training, is responsible for our for our forthcoming market inquiry into the private health care costs. This is the front end. This is a project we're just beginning to embark on, which will gain momentum in the next year. And I think that their appointments as deputy commissioners is a big vote of confidence, I think, in those two projects and in their work in the commission more generally over the years. I should also then introduce Anastasia Machubane, who is to the left of Oliver, who is our company secretary. She's responsible for corporate governance in the organization, so she's the person who sees to it that all our plans are in place and reports are handed in and all the structures meet. And on her left is Maggie Mafokeng, who is the head of our finance division. Maggie is a registered chartered accountant. She reports directly to the CFO, and both Anastasia and Maggie have been instrumental behind the scenes in preparing the APP, which is the subject of discussion today. Chair, I'm gonna share this presentation with both Trudy and Oliver. Mm-hmm. So I'll speak for a little bit and then hand over to them to address certain aspects of the presentation. Okay, well, just to remind everybody, this is an old slide. We always put it up just so that people are clear that the objective of the Competition Commission is to promote competition in the economy. That's its objective, and it does this in order to achieve a whole range of socially desirable outcomes, amongst them efficiency, consumer welfare, employment creation, international competitiveness, small business promotion, and promoting a greater state of ownership, particularly with respect to historically disadvantaged persons. I think it's important also to contextualize the APP that's the subject of today's meeting. Just to go over it, this current APP is the last year of a strategic plan that we developed 3 years ago, 2010-2013. So 3 years ago we developed a three-year strategic plan. So the plan hasn't changed, the strategic plan hasn't changed, although annually we review the achievements of targets in that plan and revise those targets accordingly. We evaluate progress generally and see what the threats and weaknesses and blockages might be. We look at every year what changes might have occurred internally and external to the organization. And as a consequence of that, we have now the current annual performance plan for 2013-2014, which we'll talk about today. Next year, this calendar year, we will undertake, as per new regulations, a 5-year strategic plan for 2014-2019, and that might see a break somewhat insofar as that's possible from the current plan, but that's something that we will spend a lot of time in the next financial year putting together. That's the 5-year strategic plan that will see us through the next 5 years. I think this slide is important because I know Paul Ledwaba from EDD very helpfully commented to me, but Chan, your APP is not altogether different from last year's. Well, the reason is that last year's and this year's APP are working off the same strategic plan, which hasn't changed substantially, so there will be a lot of similarities between those two plans. The next slide just looks at this in a little bit more detail, and I won't go through it, but if you look at our first generation strategic plan as compared to our second, you'll see that the first one deals with a lot of process and structure and approach and how we deal with things at a basic level, whereas in the second year we kind of deepened it a little bit more around how we kind of prioritize and how we create greater levels of competency in the Competition Commission. Yeah, I think also very important is how our plans are aligned with broader policy processes and government, and in particular we are aligned to EDD's outcome 4, which is decent employment through growth. And if you look at each of the outputs that plan is putting forth, and you look at, we've looked in the slide, we're looking at what the Competition Commission's contributions are to achieving these outputs. I think it'll be very clear from this is that we're not the sharpest or most direct policy instrument in achieving each one of these objectives, but certainly we have a big role to play in creating the conditions for these objectives to be met. In terms of obstacles to growth, it is indeed through the Competition Commission cases and the media coverage and publicity it gets that we're able to kind of identify some of these obstacles. In terms of labor absorbing growth, the Competition Commission has prioritized cases that raise the costs of inputs into manufacturing. And of course, the manufacturing is the sector that is most labor absorbing, so decreasing the costs of inputs into manufacturing will boost or incentivize the growth of the manufacturing sector. In terms of reducing employment, we've paid some emphasis in placing conditions to mergers to limit job growth, to limit job losses, I beg your pardon, but also the as an organization itself, the Commission offers employment opportunities to young people through its graduate trainee program. In terms of raising our competitiveness as a country as a whole, our enforcement and advocacy is also targeted at changing business culture and business behavior to promote higher levels of rivalry in the local market and therefore making local firms more competitive globally. In terms of cost to the economy, we also prioritize cases that raise the cost of doing business and raise the cost of the end consumer. For example, our food cases, but in terms of business, our banking and telecommunication cases are important in decreasing costs for businesses. In terms of small businesses and cooperatives, the very nature of our work in breaking up cartels and the stranglehold that dominant firms might have over particular markets are important acts in that they create spaces for small businesses to enter these markets and to grow in them. And in terms of expansion for the public works program, one of the major areas of our work has been in bid rigging or collusive tendering, and we'll speak a little bit about that, but also we've also had cases dealing with product markets in the building industry. Chair, this slide is then a summary of all the strategic objectives that we're currently working off. You've seen this slide for the last 3 years. These are all the objectives that we've sought to achieve in those 3 years around our strategic planning, and a lot of our plans, more detailed plans, are based on these objectives. I think then getting to the current year's plan, what has happened in the recent past that informs our current plan, our 2013-2014 plan. And as the chairs mentioned, we've had one section of the Competition Amendment Act coming into effect on the 1st of April this year. This is a section dealing with market inquiries, and Trudy will speak a little bit more about that, but that's going to have a major impact in this current year in terms of what the organization does. Secondly, in this coming period, we see a lot more stakeholder engagement, where the Commission will be called upon to make inputs into industrial and economic policy processes, and us facilitating the participation of wider stakeholders in both our internal processes and policy-making processes. And I think also currently we're seeing the role of economic law and policies as a major catalyst in bringing out economic transformation as we increase our focus on outcomes that impact on the economy. Also in the current period, in the current year, we've just had in the previous year, well, next year, the current year, in other words, ending March this year, is a year in which we have taken a number of cases to the Constitutional Court. We had one very significant victory in that court, where the court supported our view that initiating a case needn't be done on a very restrictive basis. In other words, we needn't investigate only very narrowly what was complained of. We can investigate more broadly behaviors around the complaint, and in particular this case gave the tribunal the powers to exercise its inquisitorial powers to explore more what the offensive behavior might be, and not only to restrict its questioning to what was complained of. I should say that was one of three cases we won at the Constitutional Court. While we didn't win the other two, we lost those on procedural grounds rather than on substantive ones. In other words, in those remaining two cases, the court didn't grant us condemnation for being late in making our application. But notwithstanding that, the one judgment we did get was important, was very important, and in a number of aspects covered a lot of the issues raised in the other two cases to enable us to move forward on a number of cases that got stalled in the last year as a consequence of these Constitutional Court cases. Chair, regarding the changes in the internal operating environment, the Commission has a very steady turnover of staff. We have a number of new professionals coming in every year. Staff retention has always been an issue for us. I should say that in the last 2 years, our staff turnover was around 10%, which is coming down from 20% in previous years, and this is in the last 2 years. In the current year, I haven't worked out the actual figures yet, but I think it has increased. But certainly 10% is not something to be concerned about in terms of staff turnover for an institution like ours, especially since we are very cognizant of this issue and we plan for a staff turnover. In other words, we assume there will be one, and we put into place mechanisms to ensure that new staff coming in are properly trained and in the quickest time possible to get onto the top of their job and to deliver, and that we found to be a far more realistic and effective thing to be doing than to rather wanting to keep staff all the time, rather assume that you will have a particular staff turnover and cater for that by ensuring there's constant training of staff. So in this next period, we will look at implementing reviewed human resource policies, the market inquiry into the healthcare sectors, which we will speak about a little bit more. And Chair, in this period, we've utilized very nicely our internal audit mechanisms in the organization by identifying issues that need refining and fixing and further improvement in the organization. So we've used internal auditing to identify those and to make recommendations to management on how to fix those, and amongst those are issues related to procurement and getting our supply database, particularly with respect to legal counsel, working better, and we've set up a committee on IT governance. We're looking very seriously at how we manage our case pipeline, because these cases come fast and furious and they all have to be managed through not only internally in the organization but with respect to external organizations like the tribunal and the high courts, and it's a lot of coordination dealing with private sector lawyers in this as well. And we will look at improving our performance information, how we report on our performance, and to kind of get greater levels of consistency around how we fine errant firms when we reach settlement with them. So we're kind of looking at a policy to ensure that there's fairness in the fining process between firms, particularly within a case, but also between cases. Chair, at this point I would like to ask Trudy to take over to speak more about some of the more advocacy and policy issues that the Commission has to deal with and which will be emphasized in this coming financial year.
Okay, thanks Chen, and good afternoon to everyone. So I'm going to talk a bit about advocacy and market inquiries, as Chen has mentioned. Just to reiterate, and also as the Chair mentioned as we began this session, that we are dealing with the triple challenge in our economy and in socioeconomic development in general, in terms of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And we see our contribution as an authority to dealing with this in terms of aligning ourselves to certain guiding policies. We've talked about how we align to EDD's work program, but also broader policies like the New Growth Path, industrial policy action plans, and also the National Development Plan. And how we aligned ourselves to this is through our three goals that I think we've also talked about quite a lot in this committee, in terms of prioritization of key sectors, advocacy for pro-competitive outcomes, and achieving or realizing a high-performance agency. And so for the next few slides, I'm going to focus on the advocacy for pro-competitive outcomes. Now, in terms of how we think about the term advocacy, because in different markets, you know, in different countries, people think about advocacy in different ways. But in our context, we think about it as encouraging a culture of fair competition. And we encourage that culture through various mechanisms. We educate consumers and businesses about the importance of competition, We influence, advise, and inform decision makers about competition, and we also monitor and support the Commission stakeholders in terms of ensuring that they act in pro-competitive ways. So if you have to think about it functionally, my key advocacy areas, which would mostly be conducted by our advocacy and stakeholder relations division, would firstly be policy advice to government departments and legislators. Increasingly, we get requests or people talking to us about upcoming legislation or even existing legislation about accords that are being put in place as to not so much, I mean, it's not a question of should we do this or not, but more how do we do this in a pro-competitive way and how do we do this in a way that doesn't offend competition law. So that's one broad way that we support, inform and advise other decision makers. Then there are also cases that we resolve through advocacy. You know, there are instances where a penalty is not appropriate or it's not the most effective way of dealing with an issue. It could be that simply changing a rule in the way that people engage within an industry association, for instance, is the best way to deal with a case, and therefore we would then resolve the case that way rather than expending resources and going to court when there's a more effective way of dealing with an issue. There's also education and compliance training. This is more, you know, people approaching us to ask for training, but also ensuring that firms that have contravened the Act in previous instances are putting into place compliance programs and understand how they need to change their conduct going forward. In terms of advocacy, we also look at external relations in general, including international relations, where we try to, you know, advance our understanding of competition policy as South Africa to various fora like the OECD or the International Competition Network, or even more recently the African Competition Forum, which has been a great way for competition authorities across the continent to get together and to learn from one another, and also, you know, for us to share South African insights, but also to create an environment where even when South African companies go to trade in the rest of the continent, they understand that there are competition laws in those countries and they have to comply in as much as they comply at home. And we also generate some thought leadership on competition policy as part of our advocacy activities, writing articles, writing opinion pieces, just to keep the subject alive. So just before I get into the issue of the market inquiry, looking at key advocacy projects going forward for 2013 and 14, we're going to be looking at revitalizing the stakeholder management framework for the Commission to ensure that we meet the needs of our stakeholders as required. Market inquiries broadly fall within this body of work also because it's more about inquiring holistically into a market rather than enforcement and investigation. We're also seeking to look into a project looking at the role of government in markets because we've had, you know, one or two issues come up in various contexts where it's often felt like we don't fully understand the impact of government policy, government subsidies, rules, regulations, licensing, and how all of those affect competition. We're going to be looking at public interest in mergers as always, but focusing more on the other public interest criteria. We've developed quite a useful and good practice in terms of dealing with employment losses, ensuring that when mergers occur, we limit the number of jobs lost. But there are also other public interest criteria that the Act calls on us to examine, including black economic empowerment, international competitiveness, small business development, industrial development. So we're also going to be focusing a bit more on those aspects of measure control. We're also pleased that this year South Africa hosts the International Competition Network Cartel Workshop. It's called a workshop, but it's actually usually, you know, quite a big affair. We have agencies from all over the world who will be coming to South Africa, to Cape Town, in fact, in October, and dealing with various aspects of cartel enforcement and sharing insights and also just, you know, bringing our colleagues from all over the world to South Africa. I've spoken a bit about the African Competition Forum. where our interactions there, we're focusing on research and capacity building. We've already held a workshop in Namibia late last year to look at research skills and investigations. We also engaged in a research project where we're looking at various commodities, cement, sugar, poultry, in 6 African countries. And the interesting thing here is that we're looking at not just how competition functions in different countries in those markets, but also whether there are any cross-border competition issues. Because that's often a gap that's often left out. We think about, for instance, cartels within a country, but we never think about how, for instance, in East Africa, companies can actually allocate countries so that you only have one cement company, for instance, in Tanzania. And Tanzanians think that's kind of, you know, that's the outcome of the market, whereas it's actually that another company which could have entered into the same market has decided that they will take Kenya. So that's just an example, but it just shows how you also need to think about competition issues in a cross-border way. The same with SADC. Some of our partners in this research include Namibia and Zambia, and we'd also be looking at the same kind of cross-border implications of competition. And then finally, on our advocacy agenda, just in terms of big projects, we're also hoping to expand our social media presence. We find that, you know, a lot of people nowadays interact on social media. That's how they keep up with news, how they keep up with our work, and so we want to increase our presence on those platforms. We already have a Twitter account, so you can follow at ComComFA. Okay, the next slide I won't spend too much time on. It just also situates the work of the Commission just in terms of where the prioritization fits in and how it helps us to optimize resources. Just as a reminder, in terms of our priority sectors, both for investigation and advocacy, it's food and agro-processing, infrastructure and construction, intermediate products, construction services, banking. And we found that especially over the past planning cycle, it's been helpful to prioritize sectors because we can focus resources and we can increase the number of investigations and the depth and the quality of outcomes, rather than if you're just looking at the economy as, you know, honestly we are looking at the economy as a whole, but if you don't have a particular focus, then you might end up having a very scattershot approach, whereas if there's a focus on problematic parts of the economy, you're able to get more of a return. Of course, for the next planning cycle, we're going to be revisiting those priority sectors. And as the Commissioner mentioned, the key criteria really that we've looked at previously, we might change this, but it's generally been about impact on poor households. So looking at those value chains where those households would be spending more, a higher proportion of their income, and also looking at an enabling environment for business. Banking, telecoms, which obviously then has also spillover effect into employment. If we're able to reduce the cost base in the economy, then we're able to be more productive. Then the last thing I'm going to talk about on the next slide is then the latest amendment, the Competition Amendment Act of 2009. I think committee members would be just aware of the broader outlines of the provisions. So what has come into effect, or what comes into effect on the 1st of April, is the market inquiry provision of the Amendment Act. And that essentially gives us formal powers to conduct market inquiries. And now we have conducted an inquiry in the past in the form of the banking inquiry. But in this case, we have, you know, better powers and a better structure in which we could do this. Whereas the banking inquiry was purely voluntary, we are now able to ask for documents, to summon witnesses to come before us if we feel that there's particular information that we need to inform an inquiry, rather than just accepting what's been given to us. You know, the Act defines an inquiry as a formal study into the general state of competition in the market, without exclusive reference to a particular firm. So it would obviously be more appropriate for us to use these powers in instances where it's not clear that there's any one individual firm that's doing anything that contravenes the law, but there's just something about the market as a whole that's not working. So it could be that the source of the problem is regulation. It could be that the incentives of private actors in the market are not well aligned, that something more needs to be done, that legislation needs to be changed. So those kinds of problems where to investigate would be going completely on the wrong path, but to then inquire about the market and how it can be better structured or better regulated would be the most appropriate way. The Act set out the conditions under which we could undertake an inquiry. So it talks about whether the distortion in the market or where we're trying to further the purposes of the Act. So in a way, I mean, you know, there's been commentary about how perhaps this is too wide-ranging. But actually, by limiting us to distortions of competition or the purposes of the Act, there are clear boundaries beyond which we can go. And we'd always have to justify before we embark on an inquiry as to why we think there's a distortion or why we think inquiring into this would further the purposes of the Act. The amendment also gives them various kind of rules for how to initiate an inquiry. It tells us how, you know, we need to, for instance, publish a notice in the Gazette of the terms of reference, and the terms of reference has to include a timeline and has to include a scope to inform market participants about what that inquiry will entail. So it's not a fishing expedition. And it also guides us in terms of the outcome of an inquiry, that it could be nothing. It could be that we inquire, we find that there's nothing to worry about. It could be a recommendation to the minister, which will then be tabled at cabinet. It could be that we do find that actually there are contraventions, and then we can open an investigation. Or there are contraventions, but the firms are willing to settle immediately, and we can then settle any of those contraventions. Then in terms of where we are in terms of our thinking about inquiries, it's likely, very, very likely, that the first one would be into private healthcare. We briefed the committee when we were here last about our thinking about that inquiry. But at the time, we were still thinking about it as a voluntary inquiry, in essence. So now we have these powers, we just need to think more about then how we refine the scope and how we also think about the process and the resourcing and the structure of the inquiry. But it's going to look into our private healthcare costs. What are the drivers of cost? What are the drivers of pricing? Are incentives distorted? Is there a tendency towards over-servicing or even under-servicing? Why is innovation not emerging? The way in which providers, on the other hand, relate to funders, how is that working, and is there an imbalance of power, and is there a way to remedy that imbalance of power, if there is any? So in broad terms, it's basically, as explained, trying to understand how does this market work. It seems to be failing. Why is it failing? Or if it's not failing, and there are some distortions, what are those distortions? How do we remedy them? And then recommendations would emerge. And most of those recommendations would probably be to other regulators, other policymakers. It wouldn't obviously be competition law interventions. And so we're finalizing the terms of reference. We've had discussions with some stakeholders, and we expect within the next few months, three or four months, we should be able then to publish the terms of reference in the Government Gazette. Thanks.
Thank you, Trudy. I'm going to now ask Oliver to speak a little bit about our enforcement activities. Now, there's two divisions in the Commission that are responsible for investigating cases, either because of a complaint or because we initiated the investigation ourselves. That's the Cartels Division that Oliver has been heading for the last few years, and our Enforcement Division, which deals more with abuse of dominance type cases. So they're two divisions that are responsible for investigating, and one division, our Legal Services Division, that does the litigation. In other words, after the investigation occurs, that division will prosecute these cases before the tribunal, and should there be appeals of the tribunal decision, that division will ensure that those cases are handled properly in any of the appeal courts that the case might go to. Unfortunately, one of the limitations of the format of our planning documents, it tells you how many cases will investigate, how many cases will prosecute. And we're not going to go through those numbers. You'll find them in the documents. We want to give you a flavor of the kinds of cases that we'll be pursuing either through investigation or prosecution. But I must also ask Oliver to speak a little bit first about our construction bid rigging project.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee and colleagues. I think firstly, I was just going to go through one of the major projects that the Commission has been investigating for the last 2 years or so in the construction sector. And as you know, members, that construction has been one of the priorities of the Commission. Just a very, very brief background to remind the members of this particular project is that the Commission, due to its own research into the sector and plus due to a number of leniency applications we received in the sector, we kind of concluded that there was widespread collusive tendering in this particular sector. And in 2009, at the end of 2009, the Commission initiated a broad investigation into the sector. Subsequent to that, looking at the best practices in the UK and in Netherlands, the Commission devised a fast track process to kind of speed up the investigation in this particular sector. And on 15th of April 2011, the Commission's invitation for firms to settle bid rigging conduct in this sector closed. And subsequent to that, we had a number of settlement applications from 21 firms in the sector. Currently, we are at a stage where the Commission is ready to settle with 18 firms. We are on the verge of settling with these firms' penalties, and we are just waiting for the Commission to make its final decision around the settlement offers to these firms. Six of these firms are what we call the top six construction firms in the country. So we are at that point. Prior to settling, offering settlements to these firms, the Commission will also brief the Minister of Economic Development prior to us engaging with the firms. Then, subsequent to investigating, the construction firms, we found during the investigation of these construction firms that a number of firms were implicated that did not apply for settlement. And we and the Commission will be pursuing what we call a phase two investigation, where we'll be investigating in excess of another 22 firms for projects that they have not applied for and did not disclose to the Commission. And we don't anticipate that that project will take as long as the phase one. We believe the phase one was quite intensive, and there was a lot of investigation and evidence that the Commission had to go through in phase one. Chair, this slide here is basically as the Commissioner said, it's this is a snapshot of the Commission's...
Just a second. Sure. I just want to bring to your attention that actually Tando is indicating to me that you all are booked at half past, on a half past 18:30 flight.
Yes.
Okay. If that's the case, then I think we must also speed up.
Okay.
Yeah, because otherwise with the pace we're moving on, we won't finish.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and speed up this slide. This slide here is basically a snapshot of the Commission's enforcement work, which includes the litigation that we are anticipating to finalize in the coming financial year, and the cartel and enforcement investigation that we are planning to finalize as well in the current financial year. And we see under litigation there are some priority cases that will be before the tribunal and the courts. In particular, we find in the beer market, the fish market, we find a number of cases we have in the infrastructure and construction sector as well. We have cases in the intermediate product sector, the polymers market, and we have also cases in the energy and transport and fuel sector as well. We have one case of exclusive dealing in the compute ticket match as well. And the last kind of sector under litigation is a precedent-setting case in the media sector, which we call predator pricing. And just to remind the members, predator pricing is basically where one particular firm prices below cost to drive out competitors from the market. Then under cartel investigations, there are a number of priority cases we are doing in the various sectors. For example, we have a number of cases in the fish, chicken, meat, milk and bakery products market. As usual, as I alluded to in the previous slide, in the construction sector we do have, in addition to the fast track, other construction matters as well, which includes basic products in construction, inputs into construction like bricks and steel, cables. And then we have cartel matters in other sectors as well, in the shipping industry. There are a number of different product markets we're dealing with, for example, the textile industry, motor vehicle parts, from waste management, telecoms industry as well. And also other cartels, there are a number of media cases that we're dealing with. In fact, we are dealing with about four media cases in this particular financial year. Then under our enforcement and exemption investigations, which deal with your abuse cases and your exclusive dealing cases, we have cases, for example, markets, sector, paper and pulp. We have cases in steel polymers as well, which is a case under investigation, which is different from the case under litigation. And then we have matters in the energy sector, in the LPG gas environment, and the last under the media sector, we have a case which we are currently pursuing, which we've just initiated recently in the broadcasting, especially subscriptions, exclusive contract and subscriptions. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, Chair. Thanks. I've got two more slides, but I'll be very quick, three more. Chair, just to say that one, in terms of the point I made about our internal audit function, one of the major projects we'll take up in the next year is to use the risk management methodology to identify beforehand the kinds of risks that we might face in our ongoing work and try to mitigate these. Certainly at the moment, some of the risks include space constraints, which is an issue that we've raised at this committee before, and we've in fact limited our ambitions now to increase staff as reflected in the new budgets that are presented with this plan. We always face the risk of adverse and constraining decisions by courts, and there's always the risk that of a sudden increase in our caseload. It is very difficult for the Commission to predict its litigation costs because it's impossible to know beforehand whether a matter will be taken on appeal or not, and if so, how much that will cost. The other risk factor that we've kind of addressed and spoken to the committee before is about measuring the impact of our work and the fact that there's expectations of us to demonstrate this impact and that it would go towards reputational harm if we're not able to measure this impact and present it to people as something that really happened. Knowledge management in a knowledge-intensive institution like that is always a risk, and we've paid a lot of attention in ensuring that there is continuity of knowledge that people have gained in the organization. Our budget, this is just one shot, one picture. The plans contain more detail and breaks this down even further. But in broad terms, I think the significant things to look at here, firstly, is that I think it should be noted that around 70% of our budget is HR costs, is our staff. Staff, as usual, are the main asset of our organization. We do analytical work. We produce reports analyzing market conditions, and that means human beings' minds being applied. Around 20% is getting additional consultancy expertise kind of research and assistance and lawyers insofar as we might need them to represent us, especially in the higher courts, so that takes around 20%, and 10% of our expenditure is on rent and consumables and things like that. But the other significant part of this is that going forward in the next financial year, we have catered for the market inquiry that we intend to have. This came in later, and we were able to put this together because we had savings from the previous year where we had not employed as many staff as we planned to, so there were savings from there, but we also had accumulated surpluses over the years that we are now going to use for the market inquiry. I think you can see that voted funds as per the ENE is indicated there, increasing over time, and the fee income, I should point out, are predictions, because these are, we get fees based on the number of mergers that are occurring in the economy, and of course a downturn in the economy generally means fewer mergers, so we can't predict that with a great level of certainty. Finally, Chair, just to assure this committee around the governance of the Commission, we have a whole range of internal governance structures which are working very well and mostly like clockwork in the organization. The Commission meets every week on a Tuesday without fail. That happens regularly, where decisions are regularly taken. We have not had issues of not meeting deadlines to approve mergers, for example. We have an executive committee and a management committee that meets less regularly, but recently, through the assistance of our audit committee, we've put into place an HR committee and IT committee to assist with those aspects of the organization's work, which as it grows becomes increasingly more complex. And very important, we're going to put a lot more effort into our case management committee, which will meet more regularly to ensure that we have we plan more carefully around resources that we'll put into cases and plan the timing of the cases more carefully. Just to also point out, the audit and risk committees of the Commission are made up of a majority of external members. So these are not people that are from the Commission. They're external people that have been appointed onto these committees. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to the Competition Commission. Okay, let me open up for discussion before I also ask my own question of clarity. I'm noting Obabu Gonyama, Babu Gwabaza, Babu Mabasa, and then Dr. Mubu and Babu Ntuli, in that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. The first question is on the what appears the first or the fourth slide on strategy priorities, which is increased staff morale and motivation. My question would be, with the turnover that you've referred to, what do you think about the staff morale and motivation? And is it really up to the level that you that is required? The next one is the issue that you referred to on the measuring of impact. At what point, because if you look at your slide number 5, you're referring to Commission's contributions, very noble contributions that you're referring to there. But how have you done on these and areas that you've referred to there? And the next one is competitive advantage. And Trudy has referred to trying to monitor also country to country and the competition. And how do you relate that to the necessary issue of a competitive advantage of countries where you don't have to produce sugar? In South Africa, in Swaziland, is can produce sugar cheaply than us. And would you consider that? The question of settlement, that you refer to on slide 13, does that involve the consumer ombudsman? And when you do and they come to that stage, because it has got a lot to do with consumerism and consumer ombudsman, so that we don't do things outside. I thank you.
Thank you, Bahunya.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the first page, the very last sentence where you say promote greater spread of ownership and so on, I just want to understand if you could explain that in a little more detail to explain how exactly have you done that, or how do you plan to do that as the Competition Commission? Because I would imagine that just goes beyond investigating cases and coming out with outcomes. Two, on the second page slide for the second bullet on your external environment, were you saying, third bullet, increasing sophistication, what does that mean? And lastly, Chairperson, the slide where you, slide 11, I'm interested in investigations and advocacy on food and agro-processing, and you go on towards the last bullet of those in a little, and you mention a lot more other sectors within that industry. I want to check whether what does your investigations on food and agro-processing involve? I raise this question, Chair, because there was a recent report which says that there is a lot of wastage to the millions of tons of food during processing. And that happens largely because firms would want to maintain prices or even increase food prices, and so an overabundance of food would necessitate a decrease in food prices and so on. Probably it relates to the question of also competition with that comes from external producing exporters as well. Does your investigation involve this specific issue, and what does it mean in terms of food availability, food prices, and so on? I raise this question because one would have imagined that if there is an abundance of food, for instance, those who produce this abundance of food, which is good, would probably begin to say, can we spread this food to, say, hospitals, which are in dire need of this kind of food? These are government institutions, food, hospitals, prisons, and any other needy institution. And I'm of the view that kind of social responsibility would not necessarily jeopardize the food prices or jeopardize the profits that companies are working for. Thanks.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. My question is more on measurement, the measurement of the objectives, the outcomes, because as we received the report, I couldn't get a sense of if there is a bit of generalization, so that at the end we will end up saying, yes, this has been achieved, or this is to be achieved, but we don't quantify. That's the only part where I want clarity on, Correct Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Dajamuho.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of questions of clarity. On slide number 7, you mentioned adverse court decisions that impact on the ability to initiate and investigate. Could you just give us some examples of what cases these have been that you felt that you have had this happen? On slide number 8, the question that Honorable Ngonyama referred to on staff turnover, I just want to find out what sort of incentives have you got in place that to improve the staff turnover, retention, in fact, and if there are any succession plans in place that assist the organization to retain staff or to have a steady sort of replacement of staff as they leave. Also on the same slide, bullet number 3 from the top, you're talking about uncertainties and leadership issues in the organization. I wonder what these are and if you could please highlight what those issues are. But maybe tied to us, that also is the issue that I see the public protector is investigating the organization. Could you give us an insight into what these things are that are being investigated? On the issue of market inquiry, I think Trudy has mentioned some of the reasons why you do this, you had outlets and the outcomes and how you use the outcomes of such inquiries. But are there any sanctions that are imposed on organizations that you find to have maybe breached some of those, the act or some of the regulations? And finally, there was the issue of, yes, the firms that have come forward and have agreed to settle. What kind of settlement? Is this financial settlement, monetary settlement? And after they've settled, is there any further sanctions that these companies face? Thank you, Chair. I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Just finally, sorry. You also mentioned on slide 16 on the fee income and the interest and other income. I see there's a decrease in that from 2012-2013 financial year. You said these were just projections anyway, but why do project lower instead of projecting higher? Thank you.
Thank you. That Babuntu.
Thanks, Jefferson, and I would also like to welcome the presentation. Chair, I want to check too. You said to ensure competitiveness, competitive pricing. I want to check which industries you think you'll be investigating or looking in eliminating the import parity pricing tendencies. And we are talking about the, you said you are in, the other mandate is to introduce a fresh competition in particularly in previously monopolistic sectors. I want to check which of those monopolic sectors which you intend to investigate. Maybe you can include the Big Six. You said it is including the Big Six. So if you can mention them. Chairperson, the monitoring. Let's say you have agreed on measures to monitor the compliance. I remember with the Walmart
there was a decision and the judge said you form up, you remember the commission or what, or the board. In other cases where there was no intervention of a judge, how do you monitor the impact of merger when it comes to job creation? Let's say if we take the example of Walmart. I'll stop there, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Babuntuli. That method is meant to say something. Thank you very much for the question, and I would just want to add one or two questions. Let's start by congratulating the Deputy Commissioner. What I'm not sure, unfortunately the Minister is not here, is it correct? There are two Deputy Commissioners now that are being appointed, with effect from? For a period of 6 months. And what happens afterwards?
My understanding is that in the course of those 6 months, the ministry will put into place a process to appoint more permanent or longer term contracted deputies.
Well, I know that the Deputy Commissioner Bonagel is serving his last day sentence. So it's with effect today. It means there are three Deputy Commissioners until when?
Until the end of this month.
Until the end of this month.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there no legal challenge there?
No.
There's no legal query. Is that budgeted for? What are the cost implications of that?
It is budgeted for. The Commission has budgeted consistently for two Deputy Commissioners over the last 3-4 years. So, yeah.
So, the two Deputy Commissioners are in accordance to which Act? The current
the
Act?
The Competition Act, yes.
Because of a minister appointing a Deputy Commissioner? And a possibility of appointing another one if the need arise.
No, Chair, I'm not sure of the exact wording, but it goes something like...
Can I give you the wording?
Yeah.
The wording says... The minister must appoint at least one person that is under... appointment of Deputy Commissioner and may appoint other persons with suitable qualifications to assist the Commissioner in carrying out the functions of the competition. After the suitable qualifications and experience, there are various qualifications that are mentioned there, and then that is to assist the Commissioner carrying out the functions of the Competition Commission. The Minister must designate a Deputy Commissioner to perform the functions of the Commissioner whenever Commissioner is unable for any reason to perform the functions of the Commissioner or the office of the Commissioner is vacant. Okay. Is this in accordance with this Act?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You said that it's budgeted for?
Yes, it is.
Under the current?
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that when you respond?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, because I want to know, how have you budgeted for three Deputy Commissioners?
Chair,
No, you'll respond when your time comes. That's number one. Number two, I think we've been hearing of this fast-tracking model for some time, Mr. Rambol.
Yes.
Since 20... Just after 2010, Soccer World Cup. And I'm not sure whether I'm happy with the progress and with the plans. It's not actually clear to me in terms of the way forward, because it was quite exciting when we presented for the first time, because we thought, hey, here's something that is coming up in terms of nabbing and being able to curb future occurrences of such practices. But to me, it's like there's some kind of stagnation. I'm not sure where the challenge is. But it's something that's not encouraging, especially in the midst of the new infrastructure program that is going to see South Africa and by kind of quite a massive implementation of an infrastructure program. If we cannot see the results of the previous intervention or of an intervention based on the previous activities or actions, then how are we going to deal with this monster that we might be facing going forward, especially where we want to promote local localization, of which we all know that comes with its own challenges. And as per your first slide, which clearly articulates your mandate, how are you going to ensure that you really balance in terms of what you've put before yourselves and what is coming, you know, going forward? I'm asking this because there should be a pressure. I think Mr. Ntuli asked a question relating to sectors that you should be prioritizing for this for the next financial year, coming financial year. It will be important because I think also looking at your staff complement, I do not think that you might be able to cope with the coming work. Moreover, that we've been as a committee also pressurizing that you should not only look at what is coming through media, through applications from external people, but you should also look inward, because your job is to also identify. It's not just to wait to await people coming to you and saying this is where things are going wrong, but as people who are also strategists, you must be able to sit back and say, we feel here are the areas that need our attention so that we can be able to help the country to speed up the growth and development of the country. So we've been saying our major challenge and where we feel we have a greater potential of making us fast track the alleviation of the challenges, especially related to unemployment and poverty reduction. We've identified the areas around the SMME development, and we felt, and we still feel, that you have a role there to assist by introducing the new competitors, or what Mr. Ntuli refers, fresh competitors, so that it's a new blood within, you know, the market economy. You don't have only the people who are used and who are so much monopolizing, you know, on certain sectors. So we are saying within that, is it serving you best to deal with projects for a longer period, or is it serving us best as a country to embark on a particular project, ensure that we put it aside, finish it and put it aside, and then go to another one? Or if you feel you have enough capacity, do you think with the pressure that is coming, you are going to cope to deal with the new issues? That's the gist of my question. The provision on the market inquiry, I think, is quite acknowledged. I think the president did well by doing that, by assenting to that and effecting it immediately. And I think you are happy from the way Trudy was talking. I could see that she's quite excited with that the provision. Would you perhaps also say that you are ready with the... let me not ask it that way. Let me ask, because the minister has indicated to us that there will be an amendment that is coming, amendment bill on Competition Act that is coming. Are there any areas, for instance, that you have already worked on, because you're expecting that to come around at least at the end of the second quarter? Have you begun to work on the areas that need focus? And if you can just brief us on some of the areas, so that we can ascertain on our own whether you have begun the work, or because we want to see you meeting the deadline, because we don't want to end this term having talked about the Amendment Act for Amendment Bill for some time. Since 2010 we've been promised this amendment. So we want to see whether you are really in action or what. I'm happy that you have an implementation schedule, which is quite an improvement from the previous strategic plan that we've dealt with. And what also makes me happy, I must say, is the fact that you are talking about working on prioritization of sectors, certain sectors. I know I asked this question that you must help in the question, adding on the question of Babuntuli. But unfortunately, you don't in the schedule, because unless you want to tell me that you're not sure of the sectors, because you've come up with a very impressive, because the way you are looking at it, you are going to be doing this work between 2012 to 2016. But it says somewhere you have reviewed, and this review has been completed last year, or is it by the end of 2013, because it says 2012-2013. You also have revised and enhanced criteria for guidelines identifying and selecting priority sectors. Most of your strategic objective 1 and strategic objective 1.2 have been completed. But then the strategic objective 1.3, which is supposed to be giving us an insight into what exactly are you talking about, it's not stipulated clearly there. I'm not sure whether you on, I think it's on page 27 of your document. And strategy implementation activities for No, it's not clear. What is it for? But it comes from the I think it's your strategic plan. Yes, it is a strategic plan. It just tabulates things that you're supposed to be doing. But you see, this it supports the question that was asked by Babu Mabas, where he says, you seem to be having very good plans, but not clearly measurable sometimes, because you don't give us exact information so that we can be able also to assess your outcomes or the impact of the programs that objectives that you've come up with. If we don't understand this, you can clarify to us so that we are at par with you in terms of information. But from what we're reading, it's not quite clear. I'm trying to understand the slide, starting from slide 27 to slide 32. Did you find that? Did you get that? Okay. Yeah. It's possible that we don't understand things in a similar way or fashion. Please clarify us so that we can look at this in a positive way instead of the way we understand it.
Okay.
Can I then leave it there for you to be able to answer? Unfortunately, we are really going to impact on the time. Is there any way of postponing your flight or getting a later flight? Actually, it's for the whole week. I know that there's been for the whole week. And we don't want to see you when we come back from recess. We wanted to finish with you. Okay. No, I saw your slide. I can agree to what you're saying. Maybe we'll even talk to something else. Thank you. Yeah, let's conclude this one and see how far it takes us. Mr. Ramburuth, if you can be just, quick in your responses, please, so that you can accommodate.
Can I answer your last question first to contextualize what the misunderstanding is? In the document you've been referring to, the strategy implementation schedule, there's goal 1, strategic objective 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, etc. We've had a slide around that. Now, all of this comes from the development of the 3-year strategic plan for 2010-2013. We are at the end. Yes. 2010-2013. Okay, so we planned these goals and strategies come from that plan, this big strategic plan for 3 years that we'd set in motion from 2011, 12, and 13. And the APPs for 11, 12, and 13 were based on this. Next year,
let me disturb you. You see, because here you wrote, let's go to page 27, because it's the same up to 32. Strategy implementation schedule.
Yeah.
And then underneath you say work breakdown of strategy implementation activity.
Right.
And then from there, aligned to that, you have 2012-13 up to 2016-17. You see where the confusion is. Because if you say it responds to the work that you've already done from 2010, then obviously I think the way you have worked this is a bit confusing.
Yeah.
Because it would be like you are playing, because this is a strategic plan. And a strategic plan from 2013 to 2016, which is supposed to tell us exactly how you're planning your schedule going forward in terms of the issues or the all the things that you have told us you'll be doing going forward. This is a plan, and the way you have put it is quite confused. Maybe that's why we are a bit confused.
Okay. Just to say that, you know, in practice, an organization like ours does a huge strategic planning exercise once every few years. It used to be every 3 years. The new MTEF requires us to do it for 5 years now, and starting next year they will insist on a 5-year strategic plan. What it means is for the next 5 years you are working off that strategic plan. It doesn't mean every year within that 5 years you come up with a new strategic plan. That's not my understanding. 5 years afterwards you will. And I think that that's the issue here, is that we are in the final year of a 3-year strategic plan that started in 2010, and we're now in the final year of that strategic plan. Next year we'll have a new 5-year strategic plan, and for the next 5 years thereafter we'll work off that strategic plan with the kinds of adjustments that this slide is meant to illustrate will happen. It won't be exactly the same. Every year we'll learn from the experience, but it's not every year that you go through doing a strategic plan. Strategic plan by their nature are multi-year plans. They're not something that, you know, you do every year for 1 year.
Okay, I take that, but that's our understanding,
right,
that you have once off 5-year plan,
right,
on an annual basis you review. That's our understanding. Hence, even when I started, I spoke about the reviewer.
Right.
A reviewed threat plan, reviewed organogram, because when you have new ways of doing things, you have new mandates or additional mandates, you have to adjust, obviously. And then coming with that are added responsibilities. You might need to add more personnel, and that would affect your organogram. And added to that, you might need also to add a little budget to that. That would also affect your annual projections, because we work on projections. So that's exactly what we're expecting. But this is different, because while understanding that, you are not here telling us exactly what you're planning to 2016. You are not telling us what you're planning from 2013 to 2016. You are giving us work that has been completed, but then after completion, it doesn't tell us exactly which areas have you, after that, the work that you've been doing, which areas are you now identifying as your key focus areas. I don't know whether you get me there. And this is something that really needs to be corrected, so that we can move with you in that regard.
Okay.
Okay.
Chair, just to repeat then, is that the plans you are looking at for the next period is the final year of a strategic plan that we are completing in this year, and for next year there will be now a 5-year strategic plan which we're going to work on in the course of this year.
Can't dictate that. That's the work of the National Treasury to do that. That's why they work on annually. They give you a template to follow. They guide you. They give you guidelines. That's what Treasury does. So what we want from you, I mean, we want to know, what will you be doing for the next, even if you say maybe you're finishing off the 5-year term, let's say for the whole year of 2013 to 2014. You can be able to tell us. Well, you might say we're going to be continuing with the work that we've been doing, but refocusing on this and that and that. That's all. That's what we need in terms of the work that we're doing. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. But if you want to give us until 2016, It's your prerogative, but we want to know what is it to follow. For instance, when we call you after 3 months, we want to know progress in relation to what you told us you're going to be doing. so that we can make you account on the basis of what you told us that you're going to be doing. Is that clear? Okay.
Chair, yes, that is clear. Okay, so should I go through answering these questions quickly? Okay, so I'll answer them as briefly as I can and ask Trudy and Oliver to help. And if there's any I left out, please fill in the gap. There were a few questions asked around staff morale and motivation, and I should point out that the slide that has been referred to around staff morale and is that slide, and you will see that staff morale and increased staff morale and motivation indeed was a strategic priority in the period, if you read above, 2007 to 2010. So that was a major issue in that period of time, and as far as I'm concerned, we met that objective by the end of 2010, and that issue was genuinely behind us. The question around what is it that we do to retain staff is, I think that the Competition Commission has very, very attractive terms of employment for our staff. Our salaries are competitive with, well, not to lawyers in the private sector, but certainly competitive to the best public sector institutions. Our staff get offered a lot of training, state-of-the-art training. We've had many international people come over and train staff to us, as well as we send numerous staff members to training courses overseas at Cambridge University, at a university in Crecy, which is in Italy. And there are many, many opportunities for staff to be trained through in the organization. I should point out, as it's been reported in the newspaper, that the Competition Commission won the award for the best company to work for in the public sector 2 years, 2009 and 2011, in the 2 years that we participated in that survey. So I don't think that we have made it. It's come as a surprise to me that this is now once again an issue in the Competition Commission. And maybe to answer the other questions around that, I think the direct question asked about the public protector, this is an issue that has not been raised with me at all. I'm not aware of the public protector investigating the Commission. I'm not aware of any complaint being made to it. We have, Trudy has attempted to find that out in the last 2 days, what the complaint is, what the issues are, and we're still to hear from them. This is a very unfortunate thing that's happened, because as you all know, this has never happened before in the competition authorities. We've always been seen as a professional bunch of people, and we've delivered, and I think our work record speaks mostly for itself. I should also point out that in terms of staff issues in particular, but more generally, that the Competition Commission has had clean audits, at least for the entire period that I've worked in it. We've had one or two emphasis of matter issues, but these were not related to any major governance issue in the organization. Okay, then there's a lot of questions around the issue of, you know, what are we measuring, and what the questions asked by the chair, and I would like to kind of answer them more holistically. Look, I think the one thing that we need to recognize is that our plans necessarily have to be multi-year plans. The time period that it takes for us to start and finish something very, very rarely occurs within 1 year. You know, for example, when somebody complains, to us, we have a year to complete the investigation. So that's just the investigation. Then that investigation has got to be prepared to be prosecuted before the tribunal. That takes an additional period of time. Then there's a hearing at the tribunal. Then there's a decision taken. So I think the short answer to one of the questions asked is that the kind of turnaround times and how long it takes for things to happen is not something that can occur in a number of instances very much quicker, because because the system allows for every party to have its own say, and within a particular time period you've got to give the respondent party however many days according to the Act to respond to things, and fairness requires that people be given, I think, the time to do justice to the case that they may be responding to, or indeed may be the initiator of. So I think we can look at it in a case-by-case basis, and perhaps some things can take shorter, but I think generally these are not kind of quick-fix things we're doing where you do it very quickly and then it's over. In any event, I think we need to kind of distinguish between what is the indicators of the agency. So the indicators of the agency will be, we will approve a merger in 20 days' time, or we will prosecute this number of cartel cases in the year. Those are the indicators of the agency. I think we need to distinguish between the indicators for the agency and the impact of its work. So in other words, we might prohibit a merger or allow a merger or break up a cartel, and then after that occurs, we have under our belt one notch as an indicator, but it would be unreasonable to then expect that in real time, 20 minutes later, for the impact to be felt. Sometimes the way markets adjust to different situations, the way market dynamics, kind of reach new equilibrium points, that's something that occurs over, it's impossible for anybody, it would be unfair for anybody to kind of predict that with any level of certainty. And as we've explained previously to this very forum, is that the whole question of measuring impact is indeed a very important thing for us. It's something we have taken seriously. It is a new area of economics. It's a new area of science. You're not going to find somebody who knows how to do this. It's not like the easiest thing to do. It's something we've got to struggle with, and we've got to find proxy indicators, and we've got to develop methodologies to do it. Very interestingly, Trudy and I were at an OECD meeting in February this year, and one of the biggest projects of the OECD is to find an indicator that measures competitiveness. And it is really not an easy thing to do. It's a difficult, complex thing to put together. How does one put together such an indicator? I think we are all engaging with that, and we have reported previously on how in our own way we're developing our own methodologies by taking particular cases and tracking them over an extended period of time to see how the markets have changed. So, Julie, I'm not sure if you want to say more about that. Would you at this point?
Yeah. I mean, not much more. I mean, the only thing we've done so far, we've taken the approach of in-depth surveys, and we've produced about 3 papers, which kind of, A, look at concrete pipes, for instance, and look at the markup that the cartel had when it was still operating. And it found that prices actually are going down by about 52% in some regions after the cartel is bust. But those kinds of studies are quite intensive, quite long-term, and you can only do them a few years after you impose the penalty. So we've taken that approach of in-depth study. We've also did a review of intermediate products and food and agro-processing, reviewing kind of where we are in terms of progress, which sectors we think we've done fairly well, and where there's still challenges. So we've taken those approaches, and we can share some of those studies with the committee.
Important point made.
My question, if you were asking, my question is related to the fast-tracking settlement, which has to do with the construction industry.
Okay. In relation to the fast track settlement, I think we set out a project plan right at the beginning on how long everything will take. And I don't think we are more than 4 months out of sync with that. We are, I admittedly, a bit late, but I don't think we kind of so terribly late. Do you know to what extent? I mean, I don't think, you know, in other words, up front we said this is how long it would take. And I don't think we kind of way off the mark in terms of time around lateness, but you can say more.
If you can just tell us where exactly are you in terms of that project plan, and what have you, for instance, out of the work that you've done, how have you impacted on the industry itself now, and how in terms of positive benefits?
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Firstly, I think I must say at the outset it has been quite a complex project in terms of the number of firms firstly that applied for settlement and the number of contraventions that they've applied for. Just to give an example, one firm out of the 21 applied for 165 different leniency applications, which means that each application was a project that was rigged on its own. So the commission staff had to go through a lot of evidence. One of the kind of delays in the project, which we did identify upfront as a risk that might materialize, and it did materialize, is that in addition to firms applying for settlement, that this particular firm would be implicated by other firms as well. In other words, one firm would apply for 10 projects, but they may be implicated in another 10 projects, which means 10 plus 10 is 20. So for the second batch of projects where they are implicated and they did not apply, we had to give those firms an opportunity to go back, do their own internal investigation, and come back and decide whether they want to settle those projects or not. And one must be mindful that in dealing with these firms as well, that you're also dealing with sets of lawyers for 21 different firms as well. Or you can imagine that the negotiation process between the firms would be between 21 different sets of lawyers as well. So that process as well took extremely long. Where we are, Chair, with this phase of the project is that we have now evaluated all the settlement applications. We have concluded our investigations. We are in the process where we are going to make a settlement offer to these firms, and these firms would either accept the settlement offer or reject the settlement offer. If they reject the settlement offer, then we'll proceed to prosecute them in the tribunal. But as far as the investigation is concerned, we are finalized with the phase one investigation.
So, if you recall my secondary question to that, I was asking in terms of your capacity issues related to your capacity, whether you capacitated enough to handle, you know, these issues. And the other part of it was related to issues that are now cropping up, especially in relation to the new infrastructure program. Whether would you be able to cope?
Chair, I would say that as far as capacity is concerned, we do have capacity in which to deliver on the construction project. We had a dedicated team of people that was working on it. It was a multi-skilled team between the investigations division, between the legal services division, and the ASR division as well, because we had to deal with a lot of stakeholders in this project as well. So I think from a capacity point of view, I think we are well capacity to deal with this project. But I think it's a difficult question to answer, because when you're dealing with especially a settlement process, you have to go through certain steps. In other words, like as the commissioner also alluded to as well, is that you have to give the firms an opportunity. For example, when you make an offer to them, you have to give them a reasonable period in which to apply their mind. One can imagine, for example, a listed firm. If you make a settlement offer to them, they would have to go back to their boards of directors. They have to go back to their shareholders as well to convince their boards and shareholders that they want to, for example, settle this project. So those processes as well do take time sometimes. So, you know, even if you throw in more resources, it might not speed up the kind of process.
Okay.
I don't want to say anything, but I'm just, you know, skeptical about some of the processes, because it means therefore that you await, or you wait for them to come back to you, to give them timelines, for instance, on which to respond, for instance. And if so, I still see, because my concern is not about your administrative process. My concern is about the impact that will give effect to the projects that are coming afterwards, so that in terms of pricing, in terms of competitiveness, in terms of allowing new fresh competitors to come on board, those are my concerns. Those are the committee's concerns. But then if your processes are in such a way that they actually are not showing us that kind of impact, it means we're going to continue like that even for the coming projects. And what's then the use of putting so much resources and not yielding any benefits in terms of this the sector itself? Because it's quite a very huge sector with a huge money, huge potential in terms of the benefits of developmental benefits of the country.
Chair, can I answer? There's two slightly separate things you're asking. In terms of what you just said last, that comes almost verbatim from our kind of document that started off this project, saying this is an important sector, we've got to fix it because we're going to have all this major infrastructure spend going forward, and it makes sense to make it more competitive so that government doesn't have to spend as much money as it would have if it were uncompetitive. I think that's taken for granted. There's two slightly different questions you're asking. The one on the impact, I think, is an important one, and I can say categorically that this project in particular has broken up construction cartels in this country. It has broken them up. They do not exist in the same form that they previously did at all. Because remember what we did here is we got everybody to tell on everybody else. So the kind of whole question of the trust within a cartel, which is how a cartel functions mostly, you know, the kind of mechanisms through which cartels function is everyone trusts each other, they keep a black book. If you don't keep to the decision that they've made, they punish you. That trust is completely broken down because of the kind of prisoner dilemma game we played in implementing this, where everyone told on everybody else. So I think that is quite kind of clear. I think that your other question you're asking is, I think Oliver, just to paraphrase him, is that some of what has happened in this project would have not occurred more quickly with more resources because it was a complex, because there was complexity in it in and of itself. So it's not like adding more people would have made it gone quicker. It was dealing with a lot of data. It was dealing with a lot of different players. You know, we're talking about over 20 participants and over 100 projects here. It's like data intensive, trying to kind of work out, you know, one firm, which of these projects they were involved in each of the projects, which were the other parties involved. This was kind of complex analysis that had to be done.
Okay.
To follow up on this issue.
Yes.
No, it's a follow up on this issue.
I know that you're trying to talk. Yeah, I will. I've noted you. I'm going to give you that time. But then, can I just make a ruling here out of the challenges around time? Because obviously we cannot just leave the competition commission because of the time challenges. At the same time, we have the competition tribunal, which has a very short presentation, doesn't have most of the documents we need. Yes. Appreciative of that, but I think they have prepared a slide presentation for us. So
I don't know whether we're going to continue, because by now, I think at least by our first four, they must be leaving. I don't know what am I going to what, how are we going to... Yes, that's what I'm saying, all of them. And it's rush hour, that's what I'm saying, our first four, because their flight is our first six.
So Chair, I can undertake to answer the remaining of my questions in writing, and if any member wants to send a further question, we will also answer that question in writing.
That's what I'm asking from you, so that we can tell, instruct you what to do afterwards. I want to hear from members in that regard, so that it's our decision, not mine. Babu Ulento, Ngonyama, you wanted to say something in this regard? I know you had a follow-up.
Well, I had a follow-up that I was really craving for answers, but beloved as it may, and I'm prepared, Chair, if we agree, because these issues that are coming up are very interesting issues,
yeah,
that needs to be, and we need to be informed more of this. On the question of the fast-tracking, there was a discussion at some point, and we're given some report on it, as far as I can remember, even with regard to the companies and on the construction side, we're actually given a report on that. But with that, as it may, on the impact side, and maybe we need some further discussions, as the Chair is suggesting. Chairperson, I want to say myself that within the time at our disposal, we can't finish this. And I'm not sure if we cannot agree that we have another time and another meeting to actually dispose of all these issues. That's my view. I'm not discounting the necessity to have the answers and written down, because that will prepare and shorten even the next meeting.
Okay, thank you, Babu. Babu Ntumla, is it you who had her hand up first, and then Babu Ntumla?
Yeah, Chair, I think I share the same sentiment. You know, when we get responses in writing, we may, you know, want to make a follow-up of those responses as well. If maybe we can make time and meet again personally like we do now, so to get the answers that we're looking for, especially HR issues, because it's capacity. Without capacity, we won't be able to, you know, implement the objectives that they have set for ourselves in the time frame.
Thank you. Babu Ntumla?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I do agree with the previous speakers, but I would like to add that let's give the tribunal to present. We can ask the questions, and then they take the questions, and then they can respond in writing or when we meet again, instead of them going without presenting. Thanks.
Okay, we're trying to look at our program. It's quite tight, I must say. But let's agree that we really need the popular opinion is that we need a physical, you know, meeting where we're going to be engaging further on the issues. Maybe in our next meeting we'll also allow the tribunal to present so that you can both answer the questions, because this apply, you know, some questions apply to both
the agencies or entities. So I think we should leave it at that. Karen?
Yeah, can I just say thank you for your decision, and I'm very disappointed that we couldn't do a presentation to you. Can I just ask...
Sorry, okay, I thought maybe you're calling on something else, because I was going to give you time.
Are you going to
talk? I want to wrap up quickly.
Okay.
Yeah, before you come, just switch off a bit, so that I can wrap up. I wanted to say our program is very tight. We're going to check, because I don't want to check on a normal committee day where Parliament is on session, because the problem is that if it's not committee week, we are limited. We only have 2.5 hours. Whereas if it's out, it's committee week, we have unlimited time. So I want to check on that, and then we will communicate to you on the date, and that would be before Thursday. What is today? Tuesday. Yeah, before Thursday. You will get that before Thursday. I wanted also to apologize, because this is the second time we do this to the tribunal. It's not intentional. You can see that the reason why we club you together is because we know that your issues are related. So it's easier if we see both of you. But most of the time, we end up engaging too long with the commission, and it robs you of the time. But today we were prepared to stay until late. The challenge is that you have transport issues, and we can't disadvantage you, because we know that the whole week is a challenge for Elon, for the flight. It's since last week, actually. And then this week we are told it's going to be the same. So we don't want to disadvantage you and end up, you know, sleeping here, spending more money again. So with that, I thought we should just allow you to come back, and I hope our members will still remember these discussions. The Good Friday recess won't temper with your understanding of the presentation today. Otherwise, can I give you, Karim, the time, and then give Rambo Ruth the last word, and then I can declare the meeting closed.
Cheers, thank you. I'm just clarifying, would you like to hear us on our presentation?
No.
Yes. Or we're coming back. That's what I have understood your rule.
Yes, you will be coming back, but we will be giving you the date.
Yes. Can I make a special request, Chair, that when we come back, that you allow the tribunal to present first?
I thought that's what I said. I said when you come back, you are going to be presenting, and we're going to be listening to you. I mean, to you. You both are going to be answering questions.
I appreciate that. That makes sense.
Yes, and sorry for depriving you of this opportunity, Karim. You are delaying yourselves now because you're not going to make it.
Make this point on record. Apparently the strategic plan has been filed with the committee, and the presentation is simply an annual performance plan in relation to the strategic plan for the year 2013 to 2017. But if you don't have the documents, we'll make sure that you have copies of everything.
Yeah, what you're missing is the APP has to talk to the revised strategy plan. If you revised your APP, it shows that you have revised your strategy plan, and therefore you cannot just talk to the APP and not talk to the revised strategy plan. That's what we're talking to.
Yes, no, thank you, Chair.
Yes, like I said, all documents must be in place when you come back. Thank you very much. Mr. Ramburu?
Thank you very much, Chair. We would be very pleased to come back. I think you must set aside a whole day for us, quite frankly, from 9 to 5, and tell us in advance, and we'll be here.
I wish we had that level of time. Unfortunately, Parliament doesn't allow us. Unless we meet, you know, until 8, we used to meet until 8 and so forth. We can, yes. And they must book accommodation. Yes. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, the competition authorities. Please get home safe. Thank you.